Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this meeting of the Plans Committee. There are a number of things I would like to remind people before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the sound recording will be made available on the Council's website. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent. We are not expecting any fire alarm tests this evening, so if the alarms sound, please proceed to the nearest fire exits, which are situated to the side and to the rear of the meeting room. Toilets are available, and these can be found through the doors at the back and to the side. Thank you. We now go on to item one, apologies. I understand we have three apologies, and we have Councillor Snart, David Snart, and Councillor Paul Murphy is standing in for him. Councillor Jenny Tillotson cannot be with us tonight, and Councillor Christine Harris is standing in for her. And Councillor Colin Hamilton cannot be with us this evening, and Councillor Jill Bolton is standing in for him. I have not been informed of any questions. Sorry, let's go to item two first, the minutes of the previous meeting held on the 20th of June. Is it your wish that I can confirm these as a correct record of that meeting? Thank you. There are no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Item 4, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest.
Chair, I would like to give my, for the second item on the agenda, I am a governor at Hall Orchard School, and it has been mentioned in part of the preface. I have come here with an open mind. Thank you.
Councillor Bentley.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm speaking on the first item, so I'm going to withdraw from here and sit down here with my colleagues. Thank you. I won't be taking part in the debate as I'm speaking on it.
Thank you. Anybody else got anything? No? Right, we move on to item 5, which are the planning applications, and those commence on page 6 of your agenda sheet. We'll just let Councillor Bentley get into position, and then I'll pass over to the officers. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm here to deal with the item number one, the land at 28 Curzon Avenue, Birstall, Leicestershire, for the erection of a detached dwelling with a double garage. This is a revised scheme of a previous scheme submitted in 2017. This is the site at 28 Curzon Avenue, Birstall. You can see Curzon Avenue at the front there, and the site runs, it's a long site, and it runs at a slope down towards the rear of the site. This is the front elevation of the property. The application is partly to retain the development as built, but then there are also some changes to that development as built and some extra elements that I will run through as part of the presentation. But that's the front part elevation of the property as built at the moment. That's the rear elevation of the property as built at the moment, with number 32 Curzon Avenue to your left. This is the rear extension of the property from the garden of number 26 Curzon Avenue, and you can see sort of certain elements of it. Again, there are elements on this that are shown on this slide that will be removed as part of the negotiations on the application that we've been carrying out. These are the floor plans with the garage to the front on the ground floor, running through to the orangery in the kitchen to the rear. On the first floor bedrooms, there are no significant changes internally to the previous applications that have been granted. Again, a small outbuilding has been built. This is application is sort of retrospective. The outbuilding is already there. It's a small brick outbuilding to be used for garden implements and such in the rear garden. The key issues here are the principle of the development in itself, the impact on the character and appearance of the street scene, the impact of the amenity of occupants of neighbouring properties, and the accuracy of the plans that have been submitted. The principle of development in this case has been dealt with on four occasions in the past. It was originally granted planning permission in 2011. Subsequent amendments have been approved in 2015 and 2015. Further application was submitted and granted in 2017 and remains extant at the moment. So what we are considering here is partial retrospective application and partial changes and amendments to the previous applications. Again, the impact on the street scene is this has previously been subject to approval by Plans Committee back in 2011, and it's felt that the changes to the scheme at the moment and the things under consideration here are in connection with balustrades on the front, mock Tudor finish to the gable on the right-hand side, and some alterations to windows. Up at the top part of the roof line, you can see a Velux roof light, and again, that is to be changed as part of this this development. The street scene, this is a street scene from opposite number 26, looking back across to the property from the opposite side. This is the front elevation of the property, showing the mock Tudor design on the right-hand side, and a change to that roof light up on the top of the property to a glass lantern. The balustrade balconies and changes to roof lights on the garage. It's considered that these changes are acceptable in principle. On the rear elevation, there is a large dormer in place, which you've seen on the photographs, but we have negotiated to have that dormer altered in size. It has been reduced significantly, and we have altered and had a reduction in the parapet walls on the right-hand side of the property, and some amendments to and proposals to put a screen to prevent overlooking to the neighbouring properties on either side of the patio. The impact on neighbouring amenity is one of the key issues. Objectors have said that there's a degree of overbearance. There's an impact on privacy, and the overall height of the development is causing overdominance. This is a view from the first floor windows, bedroom windows, and as you can see into the properties, you do look straight out into the gardens. You can see the small outbuilding on the right-hand side there in the rear of the garden. This is a view from the dormer window up on the rear elevation. And you can see into the gardens, but it's not considered that there's a major issue as far as amenity is concerned. This is the side elevation to 32 Curzon Avenue. You can see the proposal to put some fencing in on the rear elevation of the patio to prevent any overlooking. And this is the side elevation to Curzon Avenue again, with the parapet has been reduced in height and some glazing on the section at the back of the patio. This is the relationship to 26 Curzon Avenue, and as you can see, there are windows to the rear of Curzon Avenue from here. The building is actually set back from the boundary, and the 26 Curzon Avenue is set back as well, so there is quite a distance between the two properties. This is the relationship between Curzon Avenue, number 26, and the property as built. As you can see, it is set back from the boundary. Just to run back there, just to discuss the impact in connection with the dormer is considered acceptable due to the fact that had the owner of the property moved into the development, the owner of the property could have built a larger size dormer. The dormer currently proposed on the property is 13 cubic metres. The owner of the property could build a dormer up to 50 cubic metres under permitted development rights had the applicant moved in to the property prior to building the actual dormer. So officers believe that the negotiated reduction in height of the dormer is and the reduction in size is considered acceptable compared to what could be the fallback position of somebody building a dormer under permitted development rights. The last slide that I have here is the comparison plan that shows the various applications that have taken place previously. And as you can see, the 2011 application that was granted previously is shown in red. And a later application, 2015, again, is shown in blue, and another application shown in green. You can see from here that, original application in 2011 that was granted by Plans Committee was actually higher, and the development as built now is actually lower than what was approved. The dormer at the rear, we have previously in 2017 approved a dormer at the rear the rear extension to the property, the orangery at the rear, was agreed with a mono-pitched roof. The flat roof is slightly higher than the mono pitch, and the dormer itself is shown. You can see that it's slightly higher, but not considered to be anything significant compared to what was approved prior to the amendments that have been submitted at the moment. Thank you. Sorry, the other thing to mention is that during the process of the application, the accuracy of the application plans has been questioned. The council have had an independent surveyor to check the measurements on the application plans to ensure that the measurements and everything that we're considering is actually as built at the moment. And we can confirm that is the case and the plans are accurate. The other thing that to mention as well is that as part of this application, what we are proposing to do, because we believe that the development on the site has come to a point that we feel there is enough development on that property, we are intending, as but one of the conditions is to remove permitted development rights. So any further extensions or any further build on that property would have to come back with a planning application in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a number of speakers, and I will call first of all Mr. David Clifton. Mr. Clifton, I don't know whether you've had explained to you the system of timing. You have 5 minutes. And the timing starts from when you start to speak. There is a red, yellow, red, amber, green. When it's green, you can carry on speaking. When it goes to amber, you will only have 1 minute left, and I will also do that for you. And when it goes to red, even if you're mid-sentence, you will be asked to stop. All right? And so when you're ready, and if you press the button, and if you move the microphone, you've got it there? Okay, thank you very much.
Good evening, councillors. Tonight, the as-built elevations on display bear actually little resemblance to those approved in 2011. Every design restraint included there to ensure neighbours were not subjected unnecessarily to overbearance, deliberately and significantly breached. As a qualified surveyor and contractor, I have watched helplessly since 2015 as my detailed complaints went either haplessly assessed or totally ignored. The accumulative effect witnessed on site today, magnified considerably with the steep ground slope, provides probably the very worst example of overbearance and dominance. Breaches lately acknowledged, there still seems a complete lack of appetite to enforce significantly to mitigate overbearance. A senior officer close to the case recently implied that refusal tonight would almost certainly oblige a more robust enforcement approach. Failure to enforce has appeared to create a confidence in the applicant to act with total impunity. Even photographic evidence showing the rear patio sill to be around a metre higher than approved 16 months ago, and a strong at-own-risk continuation written warning, did not deter instructing the contractor to complete PDQ, confidently expending many further thousands of pounds with him. Councillor Bentley and myself were recently advised by the case officer that the situation was, and I quote, a complete mess. But he only proposes what amounts to cosmetic tinkering, albeit in many areas seriously failing to address the dominance created, causing Councillor Bentley to call in. Dealing with unauthorised development retrospectively in this way is very unbalanced, as you are not privy to the actual objecting side's detail. Councillors, a 40-page report submitted last year on the multiple raft of amendment applications made conclusively exposed applications deliberately misdrawn, continual concealment of the as-built construction, 2015 detailed complaints then ignored and seemingly frustrated retrospectively with amendments much later submitted, seemingly prompted to close off my initial complaints. Conclusive proof that the two-storey has been set almost 30 centimetres too high, have all the level of the eaves should be that lower than 32, and in actual fact they're level. As the instructed monopitch to obtain consent was replaced with an expressly forbidden flat roof, not lower as would be normally expected, but set much higher, accentuated by unapproved parapets, still concealed from amendments 2 years later. The rear single-storey eaves should be lower than my eaves, but is set much higher, almost a metre higher overall. In fact, almost a metre higher than the maximum set down in permitted development law. Stadium-like steps are built at the rear to get from internal floor level to outside ground level, where there should in fact be none. The massive overbearing dormer you witnessed shouldn't really in fact be there, turned down not once but twice months earlier by planning. Subsequently, even the Velux windows were reduced in size. A year later, a new dormer application, totally misdrawn, particularly understating levels and again concealing the unauthorised parapet. The application, to all our misfortune, lands on a different officer's desk. Despite drawing attention to the immediate history of refusals, nothing could have been checked either in detail or, in fact, the impact on site, and just got duly rubber-stamped through. With no enforcement since 2015, you are now being asked to approve an officer's report, which is the epitome of spin, designed to support a wholly inadequate response, but convenient response, that has been caused Councillor Bentley to intervene. He has seen my 40-page report of complaint, seen firsthand the variance with the approved elevations, excluded to you, councillors, causing him to address you for the first time in 10 years. His intervention surely must cause sufficient doubt for you to decline an application which
Thank
largely
you, Mr.
seeks
Clifton.
To legitimise...
Thank you very much, Mr. Clifton.
Oh, well, I've finished.
Thank you. I now ask Mr. Andy Leonard to come to the speaker, please. You understand the system as well. That will work for you as well. Thank you.
Firstly, the applicant, Mrs. Gill, would like to express her sorry that this has arisen. She isn't employed or involved in the construction industry, but wanted to build her forever home for her family, which is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for her. She's not a property developer looking to maximise profit or space, just someone who's pursued their dream, but unfortunately, naivety and a lack of full understanding of the complexity of the planning process and construction process has led to the need for these amendments to be addressed. As outlined by Mr. Robinson, the original application for the property, which was of a similar form and layout, was approved by the Planning Committee, with the original approved property overall higher than what has been constructed now. There have been subsequent applications for items such as the dormer window and the rear single-storey extensions, which have been submitted and approved by the local authority. The errors which have been highlighted have come about during the construction process and a misunderstanding on what would be acceptable and what constitutes a variation as the site work has progressed. Mrs. Gill has liaised closely with the Planning and Enforcement Department since these issues were brought to light and has worked with them to provide all information that has been requested to try and rectify this situation as expediently as possible. She has not ignored any requests from the Council and has cooperated fully, also agreeing to additional works and costs to resolve this as quickly as possible and to try and reduce the impact on neighbours. She's aware of the perceived loss of privacy being a concern and has agreed to install the additional fencing and screening to alleviate these issues, as well as making the amendments to the height of the single-storey parapet wall where possible to further reduce the impact on the property, as well as reducing the scale of the dormer window. Again, the overall form of these extensions were approved by the authority. Again, it's worth emphasising that the dormer and the single-storey extensions to the rear are within permitted development rights, and therefore any impact of this type and scale typically is deemed acceptable. Mrs. Gill appreciates that the scheme has been developed at its limit and is happy and has agreed for the permitted development rights to be removed from the property. It's felt that the amendments and the alterations to the property are small scale and have a limited impact on neighbouring properties over what has been lawfully approved and generally lawfully constructed. The overall scale, style and form of the development is not what's being reviewed, but is being reviewed as this has been approved and deemed to be constructed in accordance with the drawings. The development has been going on for several years and Mrs. Gill is now just looking to be able to complete the work and move into her property. Above rectifying the discrepancies with the approval, she has agreed to complete the additional works to improve the impact of the scheme from the neighbours under this application. And we're hopeful that the committee will look favourably on the application.
Thank you very much. We now open up... Councillor Bentley would like to speak now. Councillor Bentley, you understand the timing system,
yes,
don't you? Thank you.
Right, thank you very much, all, for allowing me to speak to you. This is the first time since I was elected in 2003 that I've had to call, felt that I've needed to call something in. Okay, so when people meet us in our normal everyday lives, people are intrigued when they find out that we're involved in planning, and everybody thinks you have a story to tell. Well, this is my story. As you know, our officers normally get things right, or most of the time at least, I should know. It has been explained by the officer that this is a retrospective application seeking to regularise the 14 unauthorised works and to grant consent. You hear on a regular basis speakers at this committee referring to this policy, that policy, and of course we, the members of the Plans Committee, know the minutiae of the quoted policies. Or perhaps not. Anyway, I'll go through them one by one. So what we've got here is the local Charnwood Local Plan Core Strategy adopted 9th of November 2015. Policy CS2, High Quality Design, requires developments to make a positive contribution to Charnwood, reinforcing a sense of place. Development should respect and enhance the character of the area, having regard for scale, mass and height, landscape layout, materials and access, and to protect the amenity of the people who work or live nearby. Here, the scale, the massing and the height does not protect the amenity of people who live or work nearby. Borough of Charnwood Local Plan, adopted 12th of January 2004, saved policies. Policy EV1, design, seeks to ensure a high standard of design that respects the character of the area and its compatibility in mass, scale and layout. Again, this design does not respect the character of the area and is not compatible in mass or scale. Policy H17, extensions to dwellings, should not be detrimental to the visual amenity or the amenities of occupiers of nearby properties. The extensions on this property are detrimental to visual amenity of nearby properties. These policies are in place to protect the public from inappropriate and overdevelopment with regard to scale and massing, height, landscape, layout, materials and access, and protect the amenity of people who live or work nearby. The owner and occupier of number 26, Mr. Clifton, who has spoken tonight, has raised concerns primarily regarding overdominance, whose views are shared by neighbours to the south of this development and especially adversely affected by the heightened dominance of the extensions, drastically reducing sunlight into his main living room. You may have noticed on the site visit today that there are patio doors facing to the east and a small window facing west. The light to the east is reduced by the trees due to the layout of the shaped lounge. It reduces light entering the main body of the lounge. The officers have negotiated with the applicant for changes to be made to this retrospective application and before us to seek to regularise the development. I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, to refuse this application as, in my view, this application does not go far enough to mitigate the impacts on both number 26 Curzon Avenue and the neighbouring properties to the south. You have strong grounds on which to refuse this application. You've got CS2, EV1 and H17. Now, Mr. Clifton didn't have time to finish what he was going to say, so I'll say it for him. If Mr. Clifton were to be approached by the applicant, he would be prepared to discuss and possibly agree to an application which is more sympathetic to his and the adjoining neighbours to the south, taking into account the impact on these properties. Mr. Clifton and his neighbours have been living next to this building site for 7 years, and it's a blight on the street scene. In summary, Mr. Clifton is keen to find a way forward with the applicant which will respect the amenity of both his and the other neighbouring properties. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Councillor Bentley. We'll allow a couple of seconds for Councillor Bentley to come back and join me.
No, he's
going out now. So it's now open to discussion, or if one of the officers wanted to come back on any of the points that were made. Do I have any? Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. Two of the speakers sort of intimated that there was enforcement taking place from Charnborough Council on this property. Can the officers say yes, there was enforcement, or no, there isn't enforcement?
Yes, there was enforcement action, but it didn't result in formal enforcement action. As members will be aware, it's not actually an offence to build something without planning permission or vary a development from what has actually been approved. And when enforcement investigated and spoke with the applicant submitted new plans to retain the development as built. There have been a number of times when enforcement have been involved during the whole of the build, and a number of times we've investigated and looked to where to get matters dealt with, and I think that's seen in the number of changes and the number of applications that we've had over the years of the development.
If I may come back on that, Chair, that there was, it was suggested that the heights were all wrong, there were stairs in the wrong place and steps that shouldn't be in steps, and can I have guarantees from the officers that they're happy with what is actually being built or being built, and it matches the plans that we've now got?
Yes, I can. You can be assured, members can be assured that we have checked the development. We've had a surveyor out to check the accuracy of the plans to ensure that everything that we are considering here today is accurate on the plans, and we will continue to monitor the site as it is being finished to ensure that anything that we have asked to be removed or altered will be carried out in the future.
Thank you, Chair. This afternoon when I looked at this property from the road, I didn't feel that it was out of place in the road, especially when they put the Tudor effect on the one gable end. Because if you look down the road, there are houses with Tudor gables and there are houses further up the road. But when I got round the back, it was the back that I couldn't believe what it was like. It was so over-dominant to the neighbours on either side. Whether it's the dark bricks that's being used or not, and the dark roof, I don't know. But it was so over-dominant. I want assurance from the officers that this property, once it's altered to what the officers want and what they have discussed with the lady, there will be no more changes made to it. Where were the building regulations, officer, when this was being built? That's another thing I would like an assurance on. Was the plans never checked? Before I go any further and vote on it, I want some assurances that there won't be any more additions on this site. For saying she's got through about four or five builders over the years, and they've all done a bit more and added a bit to it. I just want some assurances from the officers, please.
Yes, Councillor Tassel, we can assure you that as part of the consideration of the application, as we said, we will be removing the permitted development rights. Mrs Gill is aware of the fact that we are looking to remove the permitted development rights, so no further development other than what is being approved, recommended for approval today, will be dealt with. Any further amendments or anything that came up in the future would have to come before the planning officers for consideration.
Just through you, Chair, if I can further assist. What Helen's just said is quite right, but we can't, of course, have any control over what the lady might wish to do herself. So if she carries out development, we haven't got any control over that. She is the master of her own destiny in that respect. But what we're saying is that any further amendments to that scheme must have an application for planning permission first, so that can be considered by the local planning authority. She can't enjoy the normal permitted development rights.
Thank you. Councillor Harris. Councillor Harris.
Put it down, please. Yeah, so sorry. Yes, so we're looking at over-dominance. And with respect to the neighbours, they can also build or expand upwards, I would have thought, if requested. And that adds to the over-dominance of the, sort of the load of bricks within the houses that are side by side with this new development. So we have to look at the over-dominance. And I... is there anything... And I would like to ask the officer, is that is not within the planning that has already, laws that have already been passed. All of that is watertight as far as Charnwood Borough Council planning is concerned, please. That's my first question.
Mm. Can you press your button, Councillor Harris? Just bear with us a moment, please.
Through you, Chair, I'm not sure I fully understood the question. I think you were saying, is there anything we can do to prevent any further development of the property, am I right?
That is watertight.
Within the planning law. So what if members were minded to grant this planning this application tonight and grant planning permission for this scheme, then part of that permission would be a condition removing permitted development rights. So any further change to that property would be subject to a further planning application. So we would have control over any further development, whereas at the moment the owner would be able to benefit from permitted development rights if she moved into the property. So she could do various different changes to that property without the need for planning permission at all.
So, Chair,
would you put your microphone on, please?
So this has been brought back... you know, by the councillor and the worried neighbours, which is concerning, because I think this is really watertight as far as planning is already covered with this property, and therefore I can't see any reason why this shouldn't be stopped at this point. I think that as long as this issue of permitted rights is held and watertight, then I can't see how we can do anything else about it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Could you just turn your microphone off now, please? Sorry about this. I now have Councillor Ransom.
Thank you, Chair. I think all my questions have been answered. The one thing I would like to ask the officer, that we will actually still in stone that they remove permitted development rights, because if the occupant or the owner moves in now, they could actually build, am I right in thinking, 50 cubic metres of an extension?
Thank you, Councillor. The answer is, has been clarified, yes, there is no more. If this goes through tonight, if this is approved by the committee, there is no permitted building rights on this property. Thank you. I now have Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a number of points that I would like some clarification on. First of all, like other councillors, like other members of the Plans Committee, I am very pleased to hear that we are going to withdraw permitted development rights from this development. The other thing, I think the answer is no, but I understand from what we have been told this evening that this development has been going on for 7 years. That's a long time for people to have this on their doorstep. I know that once a development has been implemented, there is an open timescale. But in this case, it has gone on so long. Is there nothing we can do to ensure that this development is finished in a timely manner? The other things I would like to do is the size of the dormer. I think it is, it's enormous. I would like to be reassured that that dormer is going to be reduced in size. Have we got to have the Tudor effect? Because I know there are other houses on the street that have this Tudorbeaten look, but I think it would spoil that house. It just needs to be rendered and painted. Be very nice. And the thing that does disturb me very much is if we could see the view from the first floor window into the neighbouring gardens, please, Ms. Robinson. That's it. That is serious overlooking. Is there anything that we can do to mitigate that loss of privacy? Because I live in a very nice house with gardens either side of me, but I do not have that view into my neighbour's gardens, nor would I wish to have it. Is there anything we can do to mitigate that loss of privacy? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. The planning officer. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Forrest. Just to reassure you, the dormer is to be reduced to as shown on the proposal at the moment. So that dormer that is at the back will be reduced in size, and we can assure you that we will be following that up to make sure that the amendments do take place and we get the development to what has been proposed today. And the Tudor effect, that is a personal thing, it's personal judgment. The applicant would like the Tudor effect on the property, and we officers don't consider that that is any sort of we couldn't object to that that Tudor finish, and officers feel that there are other properties on the street that do have that, so that is something that we don't feel that we could object to. In respect of the mitigation for the loss of privacy, again, officers feel that that view from the first floor window is considered acceptable in planning terms. It's not considered to cause any immediate effect to sort of there's no view into the other properties, into any main windows or anything like that. It is literally into the backs of the back garden, so that is considered acceptable. Just to sort of make a point that under permitted development rights, if the applicant had wanted to, they could build an extension right up onto the boundary of the property. So we have to take those things into account when we consider what is acceptable and what's not acceptable in planning terms.
Through you, Chair, just come back on this point about is there anything we can do to force the completion of the development, given that it's been going on for a long period of time. There are provisions under the Town and Country Planning Act to serve a completion notice. That is something that would be explored through an enforcement process, which is not something that we're here to discuss tonight. We're here to consider the planning application before you. We can't condition the planning application before you to be completed within a certain period of time. So it's only something that we could consider through an enforcement process. So that it would be a separate decision for the local planning authority.
I have Councillor Tass on again, and then Councillor Campbell.
Can I have point of clarification, please, Madam Chairman? The next door building, number 26, that is a bungalow, isn't it? So, therefore, this is going to appear far more dominant than if it was a house, isn't it? Because that bungalow is much lower. And they can't build up. That's fine. The other thing is can I ask, and it might be a cheeky question, what would happen if we refuse this planning application tonight? Can somebody answer, please?
If we were to refuse the application, then we would have to consider whether or not any elements of the development at the moment would need to be enforced against. The other alternative is that the applicant can revert back to her 2017 permission and build in accordance with the 2017 permission. And as we've seen on the comparison plan, the 2017 permission is the one in the green, so she could actually revert back to that permission. But we need to be reminded that the actual development, the house itself, and the major parts of the development have already had approval on a number of occasions already. So we are looking at, in the main, the amendments and the negotiated changes that we have worked on the actual development itself as built.
Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. So 7 years ago, when the original drawings were given to the planning, it didn't look anything like that. That's one point. So listening to the objector, steps have appeared that shouldn't be there, dormer appeared that shouldn't be there, and those three parapet walls appeared that shouldn't be there, yet the lady was blaming the builder, saying the builder did it. Well, surely the builder would be told to do by the person who owned the house, you know. That's, to me, it's just a... Well, that's a bloody eyesore, that is, you know. Thank you.
If I may come back on that Chair. What we're here today to consider is the proposals in the planning application and not what's happened in the past. We know that this has had a complicated history going back some years, and we know that that has caused some distress to the neighbours, but the proposal before you today is what we're here to consider, and the fact that we can see the built development and the you know what's actually there means that we can have a better understanding of what it is that this development is going to look like, which actually assists us. And I do take the point that it's a retrospective application, but you shouldn't be using that against the proposal. It is purely on the merits of what's on the application plans that you're assessing this scheme.
Mr. Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. It is always frustrating when we do have to look at retrospective applications where builders or applicants or whatever had gone on and built without permission. But I think we need to sort of take a step back here and look at the facts and look at the fact that planning permission has been granted here previously for something that's not significantly different to what's being proposed. Question of over sort of slight difference on amenity. I mean, there's a view from the bedroom window which isn't dissimilar to lots of views from bedroom windows. I don't know how dissimilar it was to the original plans that were approved previously. It's always a frustrating one. The other option, of course, the applicant does have is if this application is turned down, is to go to a planning appeal, which could take away control of some of the conditions that we are trying to put on this, especially to remove future permitted development. So I think on balance here, it is frustrating, but with the various conditions, I will propose officer's recommendation on this.
Thank you very much, Councillor Grimley. So we have had quite a full and frank discussion. We have a proposal to accept officers' recommendation by Councillor Grimley, which has been seconded by Councillor Tassel. Can I see all those in favour of the application, please? All those against? Abstain? The planning application is approved. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That was quite a long, difficult one. Just wait for Councillor Bentley to come and join us. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We now move on to the second application we're considering today, which commences on page 19 of your agenda. And I call on the planning officer to take us through, please.
Thank you. Item two, we have the replacement of a grass playing surface with an artificial all-weather playing surface, along with fencing, storage shed and creation of hard standing, replacement team dugouts and installation of flood lighting. The site is at pitch 4, Holywell Park, which is part of the Loughborough University campus. Members' attention is also drawn to the extras report, which details a number of late representations on the application. Pitch number 4 is highlighted in green and is at the centre of the university's showcase grass sports pitches. The site lies to the south of the Holywell Stadium, just there, and adjacent to the Holywell car park to the west. Directly to the east is the Holywell Primary School. The nearest residential properties are those along Patterdale Drive, approximately 70 metres away to the northeast, and along Nicholson Road, which are approximately 120 metres away to the southeast. The eastern, southern and western boundaries of the site consist of substantial trees and vegetation. Here you've got a plan showing the layout of the pitches. It shows the location of pitch 4 in amongst the other grass sport pitches in this area of the campus. Pitches 1 and 2 are directly to the north and adjacent to the main stadium. Pitches 5, 6 and 7 are located to the south. Pitch 3 is directly adjacent to the north and is a dual-use pitch with users football and as the Steve Backley Throw Centre. Proposed site layout, the proposed design would remain similar to that of the existing, albeit the existing grass surface would be replaced by the green or weather artificial surface. The replacement dugouts would be in the same position as the existing to the south of the pitch. The site at the moment has fencing around it, which is to be retained and reused. The application makes provision for 8 floodlight columns, with 2 columns proposed for each side of the pitch. Presently, while some of the other pitches have lighting around them, pitch 4 does not have any lighting at the moment. Provision is also made through the application for a storage shed to be erected on the southeastern corner of the pitch. Views of the site can be seen. We've got views of the north here, where points of interest are the properties along Patterdale Drive here, and obviously we've got the Throw Centre just there. To the east, we've got partial views of Patterdale Drive there, and then behind this existing vegetation here is the Holywell Primary School. To the south, looking across, we've got pitch 5, which is on a high, slightly higher ground level. And then to the southwest here is, the southeast rather, it's the properties at Nicholson Road, which are, as previously said, 120 metres away. To the west, we look back towards the Holywell Centre and the car park behind this vegetation here. There's a number of key issues in the application. Going through them, we've got the principle of the development, which, as referenced in the committee report, the application site is within the university campus and within an area used for sport. The proposal would replace an existing sports facility and not introduce a new one. Safe policy CF4 of the local plan provides a clear indication that the provision of sports facilities on the campus is acceptable in principle. Policy CS15 of the core strategy also states that the local planning authority will seek to retain open space, sports and recreation facilities and respond positively to applications of this nature. The replacement of the existing sports pitch is therefore considered to be acceptable in principle. Regards to design and visual amenity, visually the site will remain as a sports pitch and will be set amongst a group of other sports pitches. The appearance of the new surface, dugouts, shared fencing and floodlights are considered to be acceptable and would not be out of keeping with the character of this part of the campus. Views of the site from outside the campus would be screened by the existing vegetation along the boundaries, and in design terms, the development is therefore considered to comply with policies CS2 and EV1 of the development plan. With regards to impact on residential amenity, views of the pitch from residential areas will be screened by the existing vegetation. It is acknowledged that the proposal could increase the potential usage of the pitch. However, the application is for the continued use of the pitch for sport in an area of existing sports pitches. Also, at the present time, there is no restriction on the hours of use of the pitch, meaning that during the summer months, it could be used until late into each evening. The Borough Council's Environmental Health Officer has reviewed the submitted noise impact assessment and the lighting impact assessment and is of the view that the proposal would not result in a substantial and therefore unacceptable level of noise and disturbance or light pollution to residential properties. This is subject to the recommendations set out to restrict the hours of operation of the pitch and to prevent the use of any public address system. The LED lights have also been designed to have cowls to prevent any light overspill. Therefore, on balance, given the site is already used as a sports pitch and the restrictions on the hours proposed, it is not considered that residential amenity would be severely harmed, and the proposal therefore complies with CS2 and EV1 of the development plan in this regard. There are a number of other matters for consideration. The Highway Authority raises no objections to the proposal. There is a large car park to the west, and with the site also benefits from pedestrian and cycle routes through from the campus. The development is therefore not considered to have a severe impact on highway safety and complies with policy TR18 of the local plan and the framework in this regard. The Borough Council senior ecologist has assessed the proposal and is of the view that the existing site is of low ecological value and that the proposed LED lights would have no significant impact on wildlife. The development therefore would comply with policy CS13. It's been suggested through the representations that the proposal should be sited somewhere else on the campus. The extras report also contains late representations that the hours of operation should be in line with those of a multi-use games area facility approved elsewhere in the borough. Members are, however, reminded that they must determine the application as presented to them and cannot be mindful to consider alternatives. The application is therefore recommended for approval as set out on pages 29 and 30 of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a couple of speakers. We have Joe Simpson and Tim Evans. If you'd like to come and join us at the table, please. Now, I understand you're sharing the speaking rights between you, and Joe Simpson is going to speak first for approximately 3 minutes 30 seconds, and whatever's left over, Mr. Evans has. So it's up to you. If you see, it would be the same principle. I will let you know. Okay, but we will sound see lights and sound buttons so that Mr. Evans has a chance to speak as well. Thank you very much. If you could make sure your microphone's switched on when you're speaking and turned off when you've finished speaking. Thank you.
Firstly, thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to present our case. On behalf of the university, we take our responsibility to Loughborough and the wider community very seriously, and we seek to do any improvements and modifications with the consciousness of the impact. Sport, as you know, is a key pillar of Loughborough University's USP. It is, in fact, part of the strategy now, and we are globally recognised as the world-leading university in sport. The other pillars are research, teaching and enterprise. As you'll know, we have moved up the league tables over the last couple of years, and we are now taking on the red brick universities of Cambridge and Oxford and St Andrews, which is incredible given the age of our university. A key element of that is identified as being sport. 78% of students coming to Loughborough cite sport as the reason why they come. And to remind you, we don't really offer sport courses, we offer sport science, but much of that is engineering, aviation and construction. It's very important for us that we're able to meet the demand of our students, and the redevelopment of this pitch would be to help support our creation of a football hub, which includes an appointment that we've got currently out to advert for a director of women's football. Hopefully we can take on the Americans better next year. I'm happy to hand over within my 2 minutes. Go.
Okay, thanks. In light of what Joe's just said, I think it's important to stress that the university spent over 24 months formulating its proposals for Pitch 4. Obviously, in its efforts to be a considerate neighbour, it undertook a rigorous site selection and options appraisal, which looked at all alternative sites for this on the university campus, and it undertook its own assessments of the positive and negative impacts of all these alternative locations, and which included discussing them with your officer, Jacqueline Jackson. On the back of that, it decided that the optimum location for the pitch was, for the proposal was Pitch 4. And then in April 2018, the university entered into formal pre-application discussions with the local authority about its proposals for Pitch 4. Your office confirmed that they were broadly supportive of the proposal, and the scheme before members now and the planning application strategy, including the scope of the documentation and the assessments undertaken, were shaped by the advice we received from your officers. My clients also sought to engage with the local residents group in order to better understand their concerns and to discuss with them what steps it could take to address them. Members will note the university has taken a decision to reduce the proposed hours of operation of the pitch in the evening, and it's also willing to accept a condition which will prevent any tannoy or PA systems being installed on the site so as to prevent any noise disturbance. The university has employed experts to assess the noise, lighting and ecological impacts of the proposed development against all recognised legislation, guidance and all relevant planning policies. This exercise has concluded that the proposal to comply with all relevant development plan policies, they would not give rise to any adverse technical or environmental impacts, and nor would they reduce the level of amenity currently enjoyed by the occupiers of the residential properties located to the north, east and south of the site. I think this is reflected in the fact that every statutory organisation that was consulted about the proposal supports it. As Joe's explained, the proposal gives rise to significant sporting benefits, and it's a critical component of the university's strategy for delivering sporting excellence. And with this in mind, we'd respectfully request that members resolve to approve the application in accordance with the recommendation of your officers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would like to take your seats again. I now call on the ward councillor, Councillor Margaret Smidovich.
Good evening, members. We believe there are material grounds for objecting to this application, which relate to the previous planning decisions and potential impact on the community. This planning committee established a precedent on a virtually identical application from a primary school in Barrow-on-Soar with application P172433-2, where the reasons for imposing the conditions were that the premises are close to residential property and a limit on the use is needed to prevent a nuisance or annoyance to nearby residents. There are some 100 homes, a primary school and a church within a radius of 300 metres from the centre of Pitch 4. Families that live close by have 17 children with ages ranging from 2 to 16 years of age. The application goes against CS2 and EV1. We do not believe it makes a positive contribution or reinforce a sense of place, nor enhance the character of the area. It certainly does not protect the amenity or privacy of people living and working nearby, nor does it accord with Section 8 of the MPPF and support in any way the health and well-being of the community. Residents will not be playing on the pitch. The quality of life for residents in Nampanton is equally as important as those in Barrow, and Article 8 of the Human Rights Act would support this view. It is disappointing to councillors and residents that the university, having invited us to a meeting to discuss a potential option relating to pitches 6 and 7, have now decided to revert to the original proposal. The Enterprise Zone and the Science Park never featured in that consideration, and this would not be sited on an Enterprise Zone. The reason given to us was that it might be more inconvenient for students on sports-related courses to walk a few metres further to the changing rooms. It is considered less harmful for students, but a far more harmful impact on families is obviously immaterial. We would argue that there will be a major material consideration and impact on the residential amenity of families who will have to endure constant noise virtually every day of the year, including weekends and holidays. Pitch 4 is currently a well-cared-for turf pitch whose lighting does not affect residents, but who will now not only have light to contend with, but a major concern will be the very noticeable and very disruptive noise disturbance on an all-weather pitch in constant use throughout the year, caused by unsupervised adults, competitive team sports, and frequent cheers and chanting with offensive language from an increased number of spectators. The noise assessment report is limited to the brief the company was given, and not as extensive as it could have been. The noise will be excessive and intrusive. The properties most affected are families, many with shift work patterns. This is unacceptable. Chanting and tannoy systems can already be heard from pitches further away than the proposed pitch 4. And complaints about the throwing tent intruder alarms, which are frequently triggered, are heard. Residents and the university will be unable to mitigate the effect of noise, leading to psychological stress and physiological effects, noise and regular sleep deprivation. It is not confined to one street that hears chanting. It is noticeable for most of the ward. I ask you to imagine you are sitting in Committee Room 1 or the boardroom at the council offices, and the pitch is up to the boundary offices and fences. Would you leave your windows open with your meeting being recorded? So why should families have to forego their right or the opportunity to enjoy family time in their gardens or have to close windows? An essential part of the democratic process is to protect minorities wherever they are unable to protect their own rights. And I would ask you to consider this application very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I open it up to discussion, I would just like to remind committee members that we are just looking at this application. We are not looking at previous applications or previous decisions. This application is looked on its own merits, and there is no precedent for many other plans that we're looking at the moment. So I would like to ask Councillor Lowe, please.
Thank you, Chair. I don't like to see grass being dug up, Chair. And I understood that the FA wouldn't support an artificial pitch when grass was being dug up. But I can't see anywhere in the report where the FA have been included in any discussion, which surprises me because I thought they'd be a big funder. But in saying that, Chair, I can understand the benefits of the artificial pitch. I hear the last speaker, you know, and to be fair, I'm not going to be very popular with her because I will go with officer's recommendation. I propose officer's recommendation on this, Chair.
Thank you very much. So that is proposed, but we're still discussing the proposal. And was that Councillor Tassel that seconded it? Okay, so either of you. I now move to Councillor Tassel.
Yes, I did notice that one of the speakers from the university, and funnily enough it's a paragraph that I've highlighted, that they are prepared to negotiate not using a PA system, which I think he said that they were quite happy not to have a PA system or to negotiate when they were going to use it. And that's on page 27. It's the third paragraph from the bottom. But he did actually confirm that they were quite happy to talk to us about whether they had one or not, which would help with the noise. I live within two cricket pitches, one on one road and one on the next road, and my road is in between. Now, in an afternoon, we hear the roar of the crowd shouting at these pitches and clapping. It's quite nice, actually. We know what it is, and it doesn't disturb us at all. And we're nearer than those houses on Patterdale Drive. So this is why I've gone with the officer's recommendation and seconded it. Because I think it's an opportunity, especially if they put the kind of spotlights that they're going to put down, which is avoid spill, and it does actually light the pitch. The only thing that worries me is how is it going to be policed that it finishes at the time that we put the condition on, the use of it?
Thank you very much, Councillor. I think you'll find the answer to one of your questions on page 30 at the top. One of the reasons for the application is to say that there will be no public address system or other amplified sound. That is under some of the conditions. As regards the policing, I'm not quite sure about that, but if an officer wants to come back now.
Chair. The policing would be, that would fall to planning enforcement to check for any breaches of the conditions, and if members of the public were to contact us, if they considered there were breaches, then we would carry out investigations.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. This is a replacement surface on an existing pitch, so football or sports is carried out there at the present time. There's talk about people would be disturbed in the summer with the windows open. Well, I'm sure that happens, and I don't think an all-weather pitch would make much difference on that. So I note the condition regarding the tunnel, which I was just about to ask about, which has been picked up. So I think we get some control over these things as well, get control over modern flood lighting, control over a tunnel system, things like that. So I think on balance, I'm in favour of this application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Harris.
Temple within about 200 yards of me, And therefore, we have to, you know, we live in a town, whether we like it or not. I would love to be in the countryside, but I've never been able to do that, you know, where you don't get any sound. I think we have to be clear about this, you know, and the university is part of the livelihood of our town. And thank you, and I don't know whether I centered it, whether I seconded it or not, but I...
Thank you. Councillor Campbell.
Oh, thank you, Chair. That's what I'm going to say then. All-weather pitch, yeah. So what's stopping them in a few years' time to make every pitch all-weather? You know, the college has said there's no damage to wildlife. Hundreds of birds that go in there feeding, thrushes, you know, starlings, gulls. That'll be all finished with. The noise that's going to be created by extra people shouting, kicking, cheering. A few years ago... We've been living in Thorpe Acre, thought it would be a nice place to live, forest side of town. Houses were dearer, nice and quiet, but not today, I'm afraid. It's not the place to live. It's too noisy and too near the university.
With the greatest respect, I think this is just one pitch and that's what we're looking at. Anything else would come. We can't presume or look to the future what will happen, I'm afraid. But as you can see, it is surrounded by a lot of trees, and if there is other grassed areas, that's not what we're looking for at the moment. And if I could now move to Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am going to make a bid to have the hours reduced. I think starting at 7 o'clock in the morning and going on to 9:30 at night, most days of the week, is excessive. I understand that Loughborough is the leading world university in sport, but with many elite sportsmen there. But I don't think there will be any elite footballers at university. At Loughborough, the elite footballers are going to be at Manchester City, Manchester United, the Arsenal. It is a different setup, and I really feel that for students, we could make 9 o'clock in the morning, perhaps until 8 o'clock at night. I just feel that this is the hours that we're being asked to agree are excessive. Thank you.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Grimley.
Just as a point of clarification, what restrictions are on the hours at the moment on the playing the football on the grass surface? Are there restrictions in place in terms of hours or not?
If I may also, I'm not quite sure why we've got onto the football. As far as I was concerned, this is an all-weather sports pitch.
Sorry, Madam Chair, it does make reference in the planning application to football pitches. It also says that the pitch will be of FIFA standard, etc. So I'm afraid it is another ubiquitous football pitch. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. I'll pass to the officers, but I think I'm right in saying at the moment there is no time limit on these grass pitches, but I will defer to the officers.
Thank you. Yes, that is correct. There's no restrictions on the hours of use for the pitches at the present time. No.
Thank you. So what's being proposed is to, from Cat Forest, is to change the hours on one pitch when all the pitches can play all day. So I don't really think that's something that's enforceable or something that's reasonable.
Take the vote on the amendment, which has been proposed that the hours may be reduced.
Can I ask for a point of order on that, Chair?
So. Yes, we had joint seconders.
I wouldn't support the amendment of changing the hours. I believe 7 till 9 at weekend on a Sunday and a bank holiday and 7 till 9.30 on a weekday is quite sufficient. And the reason I'm saying that is because at 7 o'clock in the morning you're not going to get a football team or a hockey team or a badminton team or any other team. It'll be training. And I think that will be a difference to playing a game. I also take reference to you saying that there's better quality training facilities for football. Can I remind Sandy Forest that we have got the best training facility in Europe being built very close to us now. We did. Thank you.
Just for clarification and to make sure I'm doing everything right.
Apologise, it's the first time I've used the machinery. What we're doing is you move the motion, obviously, of what was the officer's recommendation. We're only moving a motion for an amendment, so we're not actually moving the full motion. It clearly says in here that we can do that. So you can take that motion. Obviously, that can be lost, and then we just go on to make the substantive decision. So we can. All we're doing is we're just going to add some words to a condition. So we're not actually moving the motion. We're just moving an amendment to the motion. So they're two different things.
I'm not going to argue, Chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm really good at arguing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I agree with that.
Well,
I will say the amendment is a vote against the original proposal because it's an alteration.
Well, it's not a contrary vote. It's an amendment to the motion. So when anybody can make a motion to amend it by changing a condition, adding a condition. These things happen regularly up and down the country at planning committees.
That's
if they've moved the motion, you can actually take that motion. Yep, thank you.
We had the...
I'm sorry, but should not the amendment be voted on before the final thing?
It was. The amendment was put forward and was seconded by Councillor Kemsall and was put forward by Councillor Forrest. So we are now voting on just the amendment to amend the hours of operation. Can I see all those in favour, please? Can I see all those against? The amendment is lost. We now go to the original proposal, which was proposed by Councillor Lowe and seconded by Councillor Tassel, that we accept officers' recommendation, including... as on the bottom of page 29, about the hours, and on the top of page 30, regarding the public address system or any other amplified sound system. Can I see all those in favour, please? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We now move on to the last item of the agenda, which is to look at the delegated planning decisions made by the Borough Council since the last plans report, which commences on page 32. You have the full list there. Has anybody got anything to... Yes. To ask anything or make a comment. They are all decisions that have been made. No? Councillor Lowe.
There doesn't appear to be any comments on that list of planning applications. But before the meeting does end, I hope the Chair is going to exercise her right and inflict a heavy sentence on the Vice Chair for his phone ringing up. I think it's only right that he puts quite a substantial amount of money into the Mayor's fund.
I'd like to reply to that, Chair. My phone is off. It was my watch that went off.
One could comment that some councillors have too many bits of technology about their person, but we take your point. Normally it is a fine to the mayor's fund.
Chair, I'll second that proposal.
Councillor Tassel.
Can I just ask, we used to, on the back of here, used to get the appeal decisions as well. Is it not the fact that we've got any appeal decisions, or we're not getting them any longer?
We did get them before, but I will ask our officers here, maybe between the last planning application, this is only since the last meeting, so there may not have been any appeals in the last month.
Through you, Chair, if I can assist Councillor Tassel. The item three contains all of the decisions that have been made under my delegated authority since the last Plans Committee meeting. The appeal decisions are presented to members in the planning training event on a quarterly basis. So you get a review of the decisions that have been made. There have been quite a lot of decisions actually in the last 4 weeks. I think they've all been dismissed, I think. We're on a good roll. Yeah, so there will be an opportunity to discuss the appeal decisions at the next planning training session.
Could I just mention what one of those decisions was in for a large speculative housing development in East Goscote, which was the appeal by the developers was dismissed, which is good to show that the core strategy is now has got quite a bit of robustness to it, and it is being taken into account properly by the planning inspectors. Thank you.
If there is no further comment, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for your well behaviour tonight. Good, we're getting there. And we're getting through the meetings quite quickly. Thank you.